welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica, and I'm here interviewing.
I'm Daniel Lisi. I am a book publisher in Los Angeles.
And what is your publishing company called? Because it's got an awesome name.
Thank you. It is called Not a Cult.
Which is funny, because when I first was looking it up, I was like, that is an interesting name. Where did it come from?
Yeah, so it came from my partner, Hollis Hart. We were, I guess 3.5 years ago now, thinking about developing a publishing company. And we were brainstorming a list of names together. And the first one that Hollis put on that list was Not a Cult. And anything that came after that was falling short. It was a stroke of genius. So it's what we went with. And for me, it was a very fun choice, because being in Los Angeles, it feels like cults are pervasive, either in the institutional sense or on an individual level. And so we wanted to make a structure that provided a deep array of experiences and cultural perspectives, and not anything that's absolutist or specific. And so Not a Cult was born.
And your books are, each of them are like a work of art. And it's just, they're the most, if you go to the website, Not a Cult, is it notacultmedia.com?
It's, yeah, notacult.media.
.media.
Because notacult.com was taken, which is the only reason why we went with the .media. It's funny, because like it has become, the dot media part has become such a extension in like how people recognize our brand at this point. And like all of our social media handles have the dot media side baked into it. And so, yes, Not a Cult dot media.
So, yeah. So so the books are all, I mean, they're, each one of them are like a work of art, and they're just the most beautiful looking books I've seen, which is really great, because I don't want to say in a world and be all what is it, like the film announcer, in a world where books are but there is just this whole question as to what place books have in our society and in our culture. And as a librarian, I take that to heart, because I think both physical and ebooks have their place, but the physical book being a work of art is just so cool, because what the books are, you can't replicate that in any other way. Is this how you conceived your publishing company? Is this what you had thought of when you were putting it together?
First of all, thank you. That's such a compliment. I really appreciate hearing when people really resonate with the physical design and the cover design of the books. I definitely, as a creator, I feel very responsible and connected to everything about the object that is being produced. And previous to Not a Cult, I've been working in the literary scene and publishing for about 8 years now. So previously I was working for an independent poetry press called Right Bloody Publishing. And that is where I learned that covers are so important. Derek Brown paid a lot of attention to the design elements. And I'm sure you know this as a librarian, but it's just how books are distributed is so competitive. And there's I think it's like one of the few markets that has the caveat of returns from retailers.
Absolutely.
So any wholesale, Yeah, it was like a promotional campaign that was started by like the Big Five, if I remember correctly. That might be apocryphal. I need to check. But and so if your book is going to be out there, if it's going to be on a shelf, it is the responsibility of the publisher to make it a very unique, a very beautiful object. Because you're going to be facing off against thousands of others. And so to be able to distill the essence of a book down and represent it properly and aesthetically well in a cover, it's something that's very important.
I agree. And I just, you know, that old, you don't judge a book by a cover it's not true. I don't want to be, you know, maybe as when you're talking person to person, you shouldn't judge a book by a cover because, you know, you really need to get to know the person. But when you're actually talking about books, that is not true. I worked as a children's librarian for a number of years. And if you hand a child a book that has a very uninteresting cover, it could be the best book ever. They will say no. And if you hand a child a book that has an outdated cover, they will say no. And it's the same thing with adults too. You know, a lot of times the cover art is really what's going to draw people in. And so many great books I've seen people just pass by because they just aren't grabbed by it. But I think like one of the things that's really cool about your books is like the covers have like etchings and they have like silver, and they're all really cool. What was the first one you all published?
The first book that we did was an art book called Tomorrowland. And that is by a duo of artists named Derek Seltzer and Tina St. Clair. And it was actually a big inspiration in the starting of the publishing house, because Tina and Hollis, my partner in the structure, they were good friends, and Tina passed away from brain cancer.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
And so we created the Tomorrowland project with Derek Seltzer. We created the publication with him, rather. As a way of paying tribute to Tina. And so that was one of our first projects. And then that was quickly followed up by A Study of Hands by Edwin Bodney. And then a lot of our poetry catalog, a big chunk of our poetry catalog came out within that first year and a half. So like the first three seasons. And in that was Jessica Salgado's Corazon.
Very nice. I don't want to say curate content, but how do you curate content? How do you find the artists you want to work with? How do you find the poets and the writers? What sort of drives you from book to book?
That's a good question. I would say it's a combination of things. Like there's maybe three buckets. Like the first one is there are people that I just really nerd out about and want to work with, and that I feel like would make a good book. And then there's, I guess, the second bucket, kind of similar to the first. There's a business-minded sense to it as well, where it's like, yes, this person would make a good book, but they also would really know how to sell this book. And Dante is a great example of this, where it's like Dante has never published before, but like Dante is kind of the dream author for an independent publisher because he hasn't published before, he has an interesting story to tell, and he's also touring Comic-Con conventions just almost every month, it seems.
And he's nice guy.
Right. Yeah. I think that like he is extremely personable, and I think that he just knows really well how to empathize with people. And I think that's a byproduct of just like from being a tiny, tiny child having to work in team environments and So he's been a delight to work with on this project, which is, it's amazing how soon it's coming out. It feels like, because we have been working on it for years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was like, it was a concept that was spun up, I think around the same time that we started Not a Cult. And it just, so it's amazing to see something like finally release after so much time committed to it. It's very exciting.
And thank you so much for working so hard to get us that interview. It was kind of funny. At the time when this goes up, the Dante Bosco interview would have gone up as well. Daniel was really helpful. What happened was, you were talking about how you curate content for books as a librarian and as somebody who's working with this podcast. We kind of work the same way. We're like, okay, what would be a really interesting, you know, interesting person to talk to, what's informative and also interesting, and what would we nerd out about, and what would our listeners get excited about hearing us talk about too. So we saw that this book was coming out. I think I saw on Instagram, and my one of my co-hosts, Stacy, and I are huge fans of Dante Bosco from Hook to Not a Cheerleader, which I completely forgot to ask about in the interview. But I'm a cheerleader. That's what it was. And then obviously Avatar: The Last Airbender. And I was like, I'm just going to see if, you know, maybe I could reach out to the publishing company and see if we can get an interview. And it happened. And we were so, like, our mouths dropped. We're like, really? This is happening? And when you got back to us, I'm like, oh, this is happening. So thanks again for that.
Absolutely.
That was my really pleasure. Great. But, you know, and then, like, looking at just the catalog of your books, I see you published a grimoire?
Yeah, Marcella Kroll's forthcoming book. Yeah, it's a cross between an art book and a witch's grimoire. And every single page was hand illustrated by Marcella Kroll, and she's a practicing tarot reader and general mystic person, and this book serves as a companion for anyone that is like seeking to just implement ritual into their day-to-day lives, whatever shape that may take. It's not necessarily like you follow pages 1 through 100 and in a sequence, but it's rather you can just find whatever sequence or ritual will serve you in whatever moment that you need, depending on what you're looking for. So yeah, it's intended to be just a guide of sorts. And Marcella also creates her own tarot decks. And so these objects in concert, I think work very well. And for anyone that's just looking to develop their own type of mindful practice, whatever that may look like.
And as far as the poets, are there specific poets you really enjoy working with?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've worked with poets now for almost a decade. Like since being 18 years old, like I've surrounded myself with poets because I went to a reading in Long Beach when I was a teenager, and it was something that I just didn't know existed in the capacity that it does. And since then, like, poets have served just such a significant role in my life, as mentors, as business partners, as creative partners. They're kind of prophetic, right? Like, I feel like poets in the poetry scene, like, they see the future 5 to 10 years ahead of where it is. So I feel like it's always just been such an amazing point of access. To answer your question, Jessica Salgado and I mean, we've been working now for almost 3 years straight on these three books, which when we first started working together, we had no idea that this would her projects would develop in the way that they had, and it's It's been really amazing actually working with her and seeing how she has continued to push herself and develop the scope of the work herself to get herself to a stage of career that is really like undoubtable. It's amazing. So that's been very inspiring. And now we're working on our spring catalog now, which will have three poets. It's like the most new poetry books we're putting out in a season. So in 2020, we have Bo Sia's third book of poetry coming out, and he hasn't published for like maybe like 5 or 6 years. His second book of poetry, The Undisputed Greatest Writer of All Time, came out at Write Bloody while I was working at Write Bloody. And now his third book, Well Played, is coming out in 2020. And that's been another project that we've been like working on for years. And so it's very exciting to see the conclusion of it, which, yeah. So yeah, poets are amazing.
As a small press and independent, do you feel that the industry is really dominated by the big publishers? Do you feel like the indie publishers are starting to really rise up and get more recognition?
I think so. I think like to answer the side of like indie presses are coming into this new stage of market maneuverability. I think it's been happening. Like, I think the last 5 years have been really kind to independent publishers, especially starting in 2016. I think that the state of the world and the kind of content that is being exuded is pushing people to find something that actually is true and beautiful when they connect with it and not just superfluous filler. That's what I feel, at least. I think channels like Instagram and social media in general has really amplified the ability for independent publishers to fill niche voids that typically go.
Yeah.
And that typically like the big five maybe ignore or don't handle properly, because the typical, like, I don't know, maybe you've heard something similar, but the thing that I often see with the big five is just like there are so many teams like underneath larger publishing labels. So if you get the right team, like you can have a really positive publishing experience that can be similar to an independent publisher experience. But usually with the indies, like you have a very direct one-to-one relationship in the creative process. And also at the same time, like with indies, because it's smaller, you can have a very negative publishing experience because people are overextended or promising too much or don't have the adequate resources to really be all hands on deck. I do feel like the big five determine a lot of the systemic nature of book publishing. I think distribution and how distribution works is a really good example of this, or how bestseller lists work is a really good example of this too. And I don't know what's going to change. I think there's always going to be like a big five.
It almost seems like they're trying to, in a way, and, you know, I mean, we house all of their books and we've loved a lot of them. And it's, you know, but as far as that goes, it seems like they're trying to lean into just like an indie feel to some of their subsets. Like, when you're looking at Simon and Schuster, for instance, there's like a bunch of little splinters that I think like it's almost like trying to emulate that indie feel, I guess, which is interesting, because I feel like that, you know, you mentioned like within the last 5 years, I feel like I've seen that more within that time period too. Sure. But You've been hearing a lot more from just indie publishers, which is great. It's absolutely great. Even like when we get our reviews to purchase, there's a lot more indie publishing houses and their books being put forth in like Kirkus or any of the journals that we kind of look for reviews. So that's pretty cool as well. In terms of libraries, how would you recommend libraries and librarians connect to the indie world, to indie publishers? Would you have any recommendations for us?
That's a good question. And I don't know if I have an adequate answer, because I only just started to realize how to connect with librarians and libraries.
Hi.
Hello. And that has largely been through the distributor that we're working with now. And there's a conference called, and I may butcher this, but it's the American Library Association.
ALA. Woo. Yes. ALA, the ALA yes. conference. Yeah. Absolutely. There are actually several splinters of the ALA conference, even. There's ALA Midwinter. There's ALA Annual. But continue.
So one of them happened, I think, in the spring season or Yeah. And so that was one example, like, and I know that's the opposite of your question, because that's about us engaging with y'all.
But it's not really also because, you know, I think we have to figure out how to engage with you all as well. And sometimes just seeing that you're out and about is sort of like a hello there to us.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, like, I love library infrastructure. And so, I mean, the only real hands-on work that I can say Nauticult has done has been with the Los Angeles Public Library. And we just had our first event with them at the Central Library for Jessica Salgado's first release of Hermosa. And it was tight. It was so cool. It was so cool to work with them. And it was such a monolithic and beautiful space to be inside of. And it's, from what I can tell, like, the Los Angeles Public Library folks are pretty savvy when it comes to what is happening in their city. And I think like anything else, just trying to pay attention to what is happening in your community and like going to events, going to readings, going to open mics if you're not burnt out on open mics, and just kind of keeping an eye out for like where things are going. Yeah, those conferences are really delightful, though. ALA, AWP, we meet a lot of librarians at stuff like the LA Times Festival of Books. So, like, places where the congregations happen and people can, like, be in person and celebrate, like, the industry that we're all part of. It's always really delightful meeting people in that capacity.
I agree. I think I think that a lot of times you'll get really engaged librarians at events like that that really just love what they do and are trying to put themselves out there, which is funny because in the past, you know, the stereotype is that we're quiet and we don't want anybody getting their peanut butter in our chocolate and, you know, like a little fussy about, you know, like return your book on time, which I'm not going to say doesn't still happen, but but we're really, I think, you know, sort of like how the independent publishing company is working and how we're working is we're really trying to expand our horizons and see what's out there and see how we can connect with people who are our public, because it's not like a situation where, you know, when I was a kid in the 80s, like, and you needed to research something in the World Book and you didn't have it, you'd go to the library. And we do still have that, but, you know, there's other options now and people go on, can go online, and sometimes that research isn't so great, but, you know, sometimes it's good, but you want, you want people to come here, and you want to feel like you want to present a space that people feel is their space, a community space for, you know, the entire makeup of the community. So I think we really have to put ourselves out there and talk to independent publishers, talk to the entirety of the community, and get an idea of whose voices we need to connect with.
It's exciting to hear you be so proactive when it comes to this type of engagement. And I completely agree. Yeah, it's exciting to hear that you're interested to see how this resource of a community space is evolving now that there are alternatives to, especially to research methods.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think like one of the things that, you know, we have to consider now is librarians. And this does also, I think, connect with, you know, connecting with people and different types of publishing companies, is that we have space, and that's a resource that we maybe haven't seen or thought of, except for maybe the last 15 years as we watch everything change, which is why a lot of libraries are having events like the, I'm sure LA, the Los Angeles Public Library has been having them for well longer than we have. But, you know, we have pop culture cons here. That's because Comic-Con is copyrighted.
Yes,
branded. We have pop culture cons. We have local author showcases. We have art festivals. We have, you know, like sketches. We have gaming. And this is all within the house of books that we all have built. But plus, you know, and it's just different ways for people to share their stories, to tell their stories. And I think, you know, also our staff has to realize that we're resources as well. Like if we're not connecting to you all and hearing your stories, this is a huge part of our job.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear that you have such a diverse range of events happening. And I think that I'm seeing more libraries take on that task of acting as a general community artistic hub, which makes sense because, like, books, it all comes back to books. Like, all of these
yes.
other mediums have can like pay some sort of credit back to like the literature, the printed form that the inspiration stemmed from. Yeah. So that's very exciting to hear.
Do you work with any particular artists to put together each one of your books? Do you have a team or?
Yeah. It's gotten pretty specific now. I feel very lucky for the people that that have choose to spend time on our projects. So right now we work between two cover designers pretty consistently. So Cassidy Trier does a lot of our poetry catalog. She has a really great ability for just unique illustration that really captures the essence of what the poet is going for. She has a poet's mind in that sense. She reads through the manuscript and is able to really just pull key imagery that resonates really well with the author. And then we also work with Sean Roberts, who is just has such a technical command over design, and has made a lot of our art books, as well as our nonfiction and now our fiction catalog that's forthcoming. And yeah, just like has such an amazing ability to create unique typography, pulls design elements from the manuscript that are just typically standing in plain sight, and just always surprises me. Like anytime I'm expecting some kind of design, I just get versions that I just never would have conceptualized. And it's a very exciting collaboration between the two of them. And then we have an editor who works closely with us named Safia El-Hillo. And the fact that Safia gives us the time of day constantly blows my mind.
That's really great. It sounds like a really great team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just half of it. Like we I mean, the amount of support that Nauticult has from the people working behind it is incredible. I'm constantly in awe at the people that decide to work with us.
So do you have a favorite bookshop that you like to go to, and a favorite library, because I have to put that in there?
Yes, absolutely. So I have two favorite bookshops that are very close to me. So there's Stories Books and Cafe in Echo Park of Los Angeles, just off of Sunset Boulevard. And Stories, I think, is just increasingly becoming a community hub for artists and punks and just millennial general people in this area. They host events nearly daily, between literary events, music events, comedy events. And it's just such an excellent space. And they curate a really fine selection of independent titles. They care deeply about independent press. And they're just very communicative with their community, which is something that's really incredible. And then there's Skylight Books, which is in Los Feliz off of Vermont Street. And Skylight Books is just like, I mean, they're such a heavy hitter in the literary scene. They host just the contemporaries that are coming through LA. So anyone that you can think of that you want to hear read, that is like engaging in the literary scene, has been there and has had a reading there. So being able to work with them in the capacity that we have has been a tremendous pleasure and honor. Both of those spots here in LA, like, it's just I've always been like gravitating around those stores, and I just really love them. And then I have the luxury of living like on the same block as the Silver Lake branch of the Los Angeles Public Library. So I can just go outside right now and like in under a minute be inside of the library. And so that space is very special to me. And of course, just like the Central Library in Los Angeles is ridiculous as a structure. It's like being inside of a giant palace. It's wild. There's just always this feeling of awe that I get when being inside of that space. And so I don't think that feeling will ever go away.
Thank you so much. That's awesome to hear. And if you wanted to kind of put one last thing about just the importance of just the art of a physical book, what would you say?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think now, I think it's always been the case of books just as a tool of inspiration, but also as a means of the people reading a book being seen in a larger context than themselves as an individual. If you are sharing cultural narratives or societal narratives, it's important to make sure that your books are reflecting the culture and society that you're inside of. And so I think that it's just going to continuously be important for people to be seen in the books that they are reading. And so it is increasingly important. It's always been important to pay attention to what kind of narratives are being shared and what kind of future we want to exist inside of. And books have always been such a keystone element in informing that, and will only continue to serve that goal.
Thank you again. I'm very happy to have you on here, Daniel Lisi, and if any authors ever want to interview with us, they are more than welcome. The first one was a shot in the dark, which turned out to be awesome.
I'm so glad.
I'm so glad as well. It was a lot of fun. And I'm going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.